To order, we'll send around a sign-in sheet for people. Craig Lopez is the chair of this committee, but he's running a little late. And I'm Kathy Nolan, the deputy chair, and so I thought we could go ahead and get a few things going so that we can focus on the meat of the agenda, or the thicker content of the agenda, I guess I should say. Maybe we could go, Laura, you want to go start and we'll go around the table so people know who's here?
Oh, sure. Laura Petit, I represent Esopus District 8.
Mark Ryder, Deputy County Executive.
Brenda Maloney, I'm the legislator.
And I represent the district west of Woodstock, four towns west of Woodstock.
I'm Nettie Thompson, I'm the clerk of the committee, of the health committee.
Anthony Mignon from the Resource Center for Accessible Living, our account.
Pam Perkins from Awareness.
Marie Saltis from Awareness.
From where?
Awareness.
Barbara Hill, Ulster County Community Services Board, and citizen and family caregiver.
Great. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We do have a quorum, so if somebody would like to make a motion to deal with the minutes, we could do that.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. And Anthony, if you don't mind going ahead and starting while Craig is on his way, I would be happy to do that. I understood that you had maybe a time commitment, constraint.
I do, but I am hoping my mother will understand. So Craig is familiar with our organization, to say the least. So I'm sure he's not going to miss anything that I say anyway. So RCAL is an organization that has been longstanding here in Ulster County. We are the Resource Center for Accessible Living, and this is our 36th year here. We are the Ulster County Independent Living Center. Our overarching mission beyond anything else is to keep people living as independently as possible in the community with as few limitations and as much choice as possible. What that means for different people is different things. So not everybody can get up and walk around freely. Some people need assistance, some people don't. But what it does mean is that if it's cost effective to keep you in the community, why should somebody who doesn't want to be institutionalized? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that just means educational advocacy for our youth so that they get the proper education and don't need more services later. Sometimes that means service coordination to keep Mom or Aunt Betty out of a nursing home. You just, even if you can get all the services, keeping them coordinated isn't an easy thing. So we have 14 different programs in our agency. The one I'm specifically here to talk about today is employment. And what that does, so I'm not reading to you this humongous document that is in front of you. You have it in front of you. You can read it if you would like, but I don't want to bore you to death. So employment services for individuals with disabilities range in vast ways from, you just need help writing a career plan or a resume, all the way to job coaching at the job site, or further deeper, an individual with a developmental disability sometimes has to be reminded that, you know, every single day you must get up and brush your teeth and go to work, and when you go to work it must be at the same time and it must be timely. And these are what we call pre-vocational job skills. And that is the program that we're really trying to grow and push right now. It's been very successful in helping get more people into the job force. With unemployment as low as it is, employers are more willing to look at the non-perfect resume, which is how I got my job, actually. but if, you know, so the more the job pool dries up, the easier it is for us to be able to get people placements. And the pre-vocational program, we've done a couple of steps to try to help it grow. And you'll see that we have a growth plan in here with blueprints and everything. We already have an existing building that we are renting the front half to the florist. We've cut the back half into thirds. And the one third we've turned into a small retail store. Ever hear of our loan closet? Okay. So if you've heard of our loan closet, you didn't. Okay, so we offer durable medical equipment to members of the community who cannot afford to get them, or a 20% on your Medicare is not achievable. So we rent most things out for between $5 and $40 for a 3-month rental. So that can get you through what you need. And then we beg people who have good health insurance to donate us things. So we've turned that into a retail store looking thing so that we can use it for the pre-vocational program. And now we're slowly fixing up the back area to create workshop space, classroom, workstations to help increase typing skills and things like that. So this particular program runs at about $200,000 a year in cost. And if we could help offset the costs a little bit, we would be able to do more things, hire more staff. The more staff we can hire, the more people we can push through the program. It's one of those kind of interesting things. So that's what the overall goal is here today, is to try to get the program partially funded.
Remind me, Anthony, if you would, if ARCAL has any formal contracts with Ulster County?
So, yes. So, and I'm glad you asked me that, because on the form that you gave me, I didn't know how
where
I was
to
supposed to answer the question. So we don't have any, like it asked if we were receiving any funds, and we're not receiving any funds in per se that way. We are the official Ulster County representative payee. So we do, it's a fee for service where we can serve up to 100 people. We get a flat amount per person that we serve. We bill, I think, 80 something people a month, and we're allowed up to 100. So we do have that agreement.
And is that a contract with Ulster County? Or is just that you're registered somehow?
Oh, no, we're registered with Social Security, and
mm-hmm.
then we charge them, we charge $43 a person, but we have a contract with Ulster County to service, the DSS department is required to have a representative payee to the department, and
mm-hmm.
we are theirs, and we
uh-huh.
give it for a discounted rate. I can't remember if it's 36 or 38, it's somewhere in there.
This was an RFP, correct?
It was an RFP.
Right.
And actually, oddly, funnily, we were almost tricked. So we were asked to become a rep payee by Social Security because multi-county was there. They were falling behind. They had too many people. It was unattainable the way that they were doing it, and it was unfair to them. And we went to them and said, gee, would you mind if we became it too? We could take your waiting list. We could help you. They said, oh, yes, please help. And they trained us. And then they said, why don't you apply for the RFP? We're going to apply. You apply too. And we was like, you sure? And they're like, yeah. And then they didn't apply. And then we got it. And then they said, oh, we still have these cases. Have them too. We're out of the business. And they ran. So that's how we got there. And we also have a small contract currently with the Office for the Aging for ancillary items.
Mm-hmm.
And that's less than $15,000. And we have not drawn the full thing down in years.
I can just say that that I have friends who needed representative payees and came to ARCAL at my suggestion and been very, very happy.
I'm
so
glad to hear.
Yeah,
most people hate us.
Yeah, well, nobody likes somebody else to be in charge of their money.
That's the thing.
But this was somebody who had been in a situation like that for a long, long time and had had a lot of payees that I guess were less responsive.
So
and then based on that person's experience, I made other recommendations and continue to get good feedback. So that's, it's a hard realm in which to get good feedback.
So we do rep payee with an independent living attitude. So it's not cut and dry, just deposit your check. We want you to be involved with the budgeting process. We want you to be able to make decisions. We encourage you to set aside a portion of your check for savings for emergencies and holiday gifting, and we want you to be involved. So that's what independent, otherwise that's not an independent living program.
That's probably part of why you're getting such positive feedback.
Yeah.
People like to be respected in that way.
That's the thing.
For the executive's office, it came up, I think, last year, maybe even the year before that, in regard to these programs that ARCAL is offering, are any of these services that we should be doing under contract, rather any additional to what was just described, rather than having a request for additional funding coming through this channel?
I haven't seen what the request, the 2020 budget request is for.
It's for renovating a space in order to be able to offer more services.
Well, so that was how we put it. We were told to rephrase and change our internal financing.
Okay.
So it's for additional staff.
Oh, so you're asking for the staffing
To support, because we were flat out told we could not have funds for capital improvements.
Okay. Hey, Chris.
Hey. So, but if it supports the sub budget of that program, that frees up other funds in our budgets
right,
to be able
right.
to do the other things.
Mm-hmm. Who were you having those conversations with?
When we all sat around this table last year.
Last year's conversations. Okay. Cool. Just want to make sure that all the people who care and know about this.
Yeah,
it
was the advice that was given to me before I walked away last year.
I see.
We were in that room.
Yes, I remember. Yes, we met in the chair's office last year. We've been joined by Craig Lopez, our chair of the committee.
Nice to meet you.
We addressed the minutes and then asked Anthony to go ahead and begin his presentation because
sure.
you know him well and
yeah,
he
absolutely.
Has a time constraint. So.
No, that's fine.
Did you want to say anything about that?
So my only comment, and I've said this before, back before I was in the executive's office, is back when I was in the director of purchasing, a few years ago, Rockland County would give out these legislative program monies, and they got audited by New York State, and the state comptroller said that regardless of what the money goes to, if it's, you know, an amount, $30,000, that is, it should follow the procurement procedures and guidelines put out by the Department of Purchasing. So I would say that, you know, potentially something like this amount, $30,000, should maybe be done through an RFP. At the very least, you know, get multiple quotes from agencies, but that would be my only recommendation coming from the purchasing
sure.
side.
Mark?
Not that that it isn't a worthwhile, you know, contract.
The threshold is $50,000 for a bid.
No, so this would kind of fall under professional
fall under.
Services.
Okay.
Technically, 10 to 40, you just need three quotes. Anything
okay.
around 40, which 30 is almost around 40, we tend to require an RFP. But yeah, at the very least, we typically say get three quotes. Now, I don't know if there's other agencies.
Yeah, and not for this particular program.
Right,
there
so
aren't. Yeah, I mean, the closest would be.
But if you put out an RFQ and ARCAL was the only one that responded to the RFQ, then you'd be within the bounds of procurement.
Now, because we had discussed this a year ago, and I you know, just the light bulb went off because this is your background. I would like to work with you because it's come up multiple times now
yeah.
to put together an RFP process.
Right.
In the meanwhile, I hate to put it off another year, so I would like an open dialogue about it with the promise that I will work with you and we'll get it, because even the county executive had commented on it. And pull together a real RFP process.
So my only point would be, at one point, there was a contract for legal services of the Hudson Valley for domestic violence legal services. It grew beyond the $10,000, $15,000 contract, and the legislature at that time decided to go about $40,000 or $50,000. We said, hold on, let's RFP it. There's no reason you couldn't put the, you know, that amount of money in the budget, but when the time comes, or even in the fall, what we did was we went out to RFP for domestic violence legal services and legal services of Hudson Valley and maybe one other proposed on it, and we awarded it. So what you could do is, you know,
you were going to add this to the legislative, the adopted budget, put it in the budget for disability advocacy or whatever, and then do an RFP, and you would be within.
I understand how some of these things get bloated, like, and a little out of control. Not exactly what it was intended in the beginning, but if we could add a not to exceed limitation on it, and then if it ever for some reason went above 50,000, it would have to come back to the legislature in order to be approved anyway. No,
it would, but I mean, you're putting it, you're making it a budget. I mean, this isn't going to go in the executive budget because that's already
sure. Gotcha.
You know, the presentation's tomorrow. It's delivered to your office on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It's already written, but
sure.
And you're essentially doing that by putting in a $30,000 as a budget modification. It's being approved by the legislature.
Right.
At that point, the contract itself, though, wouldn't necessarily if it was a $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm just saying, just be weary that if the comptroller were to come down and they said,
mm-hmm.
"Well, how did you decide to give ARCAL this $30,000? Let me look at your procurement guidelines. Did you go to an RFQ, even not even an RFP?" And it was like, no, this was done through kind of a legislative member item or whatever you want to call it, then you would get, you know, they would have a discussion.
Aside from that happening in Rockland, are there any examples of comptroller audit?
There are towns and other counties.
But not in Ulster particularly.
I strongly favor going in this direction because we don't know, perhaps all the people who offer services, and we might find somebody who responds who offers something that we didn't know we needed that we decide to do in addition to whatever we thought we were doing starting out. Do you think, Mark, that there would be possible for us to do one or the other of those between now and the end of the year? So that if we put this in the budget, because we want, I want to have these services,
right?
And I think to have this much additional capacity is very valuable.
I would say it's hard to do. So if you put it in the budget and
mm-hmm.
the budget was done in December, I would think you would be able to turn it around. I hesitate to say that in October, November, when you don't know that it's going to pass the budget and actually end up in the adopted budget, that we should do an RFP for something where the funding may not be there. But if it passed the budget in December and purchasing started on an RFQ even, that could be a 3-week process and then a contract. So it's like this money could be available in February-ish.
So I just would like to comment that I do know that there are other agencies in the county who offer similar types of programs for individuals with disabilities, and this one is specifically for individuals with developmental disabilities. However, we are the only, by state stature, independent living center in Ulster County, and we are the only ones that layer in the independent living center philosophy to anything that we touch. So they're not always given as much choice and those kinds of pieces in other programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that would be key to highlight in this proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it seems to me that a couple of things. One is that we should learn how to do the process that we're proposing well and make sure that it works to serve people. I also think that people hear about the budget coming out in October and come to us in October. And
right.
You can see not that it would necessarily help us for it to be earlier because of the same issue. If we don't have it in our budget from the previous year,
right.
Then we'd still be constrained.
Well, I was told to wait till now.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I did come last year, and I was told no, it was the wrong time. I should, and the wrong way, and the wrong, and so come, and then we came, and then we. It was February when we rewrote the thing and submitted it, and so it's.
And I was pushing for it out of legislative contingency, and I think
Legislator Nolan and Lopez took a really deep breath and didn't let go for a second. They said, why don't we wait until the budget process? So
I see. Yeah.
That's the timing, but mm-hmm. it's kind of a repeat of the same conversation, and I'd like to get over that.
Well, I guess I'd
like to work with you on it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that I think that we also have the executive working on the executive's budget during the latter part of the summer and earlier in the fall.
Right.
And so I do think that's the right time, personally, although you're here now, and that makes that the right time as well. And what this would take, which whatever mechanism we do in terms of an RFQ or a bidding process, for us to be able to have these funds available would require now a budget modification. And so I think the members of the committee would talk about how to frame that and whether to do that.
Sure. Now, is this isn't time sensitive for any particular reason, right? Of course, you would want to get the ball rolling.
Correct.
Would you benefit at all from if we happen to reduce the amount that we were asking for?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah, that way, you know, the 30,000 may, mm-hmm. you know, potentially be a red flag, as you allude to. But you know, if we are able to give a partial and get the ball rolling, mm-hmm. you know, and then if the balance potentially later down the road would be beneficial, maybe that's
there would be a positive impact for the program and for the community regardless.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. But just because I'm suggesting to go a certain procurement route doesn't mean like a red flag. I mean, it would be easy to set aside 30,000 in the budget from legislative contingency and earmark that for these type of services, mm-hmm. just not earmark it for ARCA. And then go through that process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I like the idea that maybe some part of that might be freed up early, and then the remainder of it go through the more formal process.
That sounds like a good idea.
So I think that's all we can do on that tonight,
right.
Or should do.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this is definitely something that we'll have to discuss, and Laura and I will get together as well. Okay.
Yeah, it goes to ways.
Thank you very much
for your time. Thank you. On the list.
Yep. Thank you very much for all the
enjoy your party.
All of this. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. To my mom.
Yeah. Oh,
no. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we'll be
ripped up.
Alrighty, we will move on to awareness. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Sorry. Yeah, good.
I don't know if you remember Pam Perkins. She's our licensed mental social
met
worker.
Sure, yeah,
okay. Clinician. Consultant. So, did you want to?
I just
wanted
to ask
a
question.
Okay, I'm just going to pass out cards because they have bullet points of basically our program, mm-hmm. of what we do. So, can you just tell me why are we here just to look at renewing what we already have received this year for next year? Is that
well? Sure. Yes. You know, we always welcome those who you know, we tend to help out each year, and just to know exactly what's going on.
Great.
And yeah, give you an opportunity to share with
excellent.
us what's going on with the program. And, yeah. So
okay.
Absolutely.
So you want to start from your part?
Yeah. I'm going to try to keep it brief. I'm actually in private practice in Saugerties, New York, but before that I worked for Ulster County Mental Health and Greene County Mental Health for many years before Ulster County Mental Health privatized. And then I went to Greene County Mental Health, and I've been a volunteer with awareness for, I'd say, probably six years or something, since the beginning, and then I took a break and then I came back. But I was looking around the room and I was thinking that it's kind of hard to explain what exactly awareness does and why it's so special. So I just wanted to give a kind of a concrete example that people might relate to. Like, you may have relatives or friends, people that you know with kids, who are completely locked in, isolated into themselves, either up in their room smoking pot or doing video games, And the parents are, they're hard to reach kids, and the parents are going out of their minds because they don't know how to get them to do anything. And if the kid comes downstairs for dinner, the parent like is like so happy and excited because that's huge. And if the kid calls a friend besides being online with somebody gaming, or maybe, you know, besides being with their pot-smoking friends, the parent is like, oh my God, that kid went for a walk tonight with an old family friend. And it takes the parent out of that place of like so, such depression. I work with a lot of parents. I'm a parent specialist, actually, is what I primarily do. So I see what happens. Kids right now are not relating to each other around real things and are really isolated in so many ways because of the way that social media and the internet and all that kind of stuff is. It's all peer culture. So what ends up happening is they're not really bonding at school in the way that they used to. In a very concrete way. And a lot of them are experiencing tremendous isolation. I have parents come to me all the time really worried about their kids because they're the intense loneliness that they feel their kid must be experiencing. And it's even kids who are involved at school are still not necessarily bonding with other kids in healthy ways. So one of the things about awareness is that kids really bond around real things. So they come in, it's a give-to-get situation where they help themselves to help others. They really look at their own relationship to substances, also addictive process around gaming, but especially around pot or substance use, other heavier substances. And they actually come in and sit and open up with each other about what, with an eight-week program that she does that's an evidence-based program, they look at their relationship to substances and how it's affecting their relationships with other people, their attachment to their parents, their self-esteem. And then they bond around it, and they lead the program. They take turns leading the program. And then when they're done, they can become peer leaders. And they can, and she has different programs at different schools. So it's on paper, it's like a nice idea to have kids helping each other. Because I work with parents in the community, I can tell you that kids are really, really hurting, and parents are really, really hurting, and programs where kids love to come, like really love to come, and in fact are volunteers for sometimes years, and are extremely engaged with each other, with the program, and with Marie, and look forward to it, and sometimes say it's the only thing they look forward to. It's highly unusual. I don't know if you have any idea. I used to run, I used to do a volunteer program, and it's very hard to get a core group of volunteers, and it's really hard to do it with kids. So the fact that she's been doing this for 12 years as a volunteer herself with basically no salary, getting kids to volunteer to help each other, who now come back year after year to tell her how great they're doing and how much they appreciate the work she's doing, and then she gets other professionals to volunteer. I mean, I get paid sometimes a consultant fee, but most of the work I do is pro bono, as is the other professionals, the PhD that worked for her to do program assessment, the other mental health person, the CASAC. You know, we just love what she's doing, so we do that. So I just wanted to say that if there's any question about funding the program, it's extremely unique. I know because I make referrals all the time, all over the county, because I used to work for the county, for both counties. And it's a really unique and valuable program, and it's totally worth, talk about bang for your buck. I mean, the little bit amount of money that you guys give, because she does this primarily volunteer program, really pays off significantly. As, you know, there's a lot, that the PhD did a whole thing on assessment and found that it changed kids' attitudes towards substance abuse and documented it. But also, anecdotally, kids come back year after year and tell her, I'm in medical school now. I think it was because of you. Mm-hmm. She gets calls from parents. My kid's in law school now. I think it was because of you, you know, your program. This happens to her on a regular basis. It shows up on her Facebook. So it's really, the program is quite remarkable. I just wanted to say that because I've been a volunteer for so many years. Usually, mostly not getting paid, and happy to do it anyway. For the most part, although it's nice when you can throw me some bucks. So anyway,
and just to expand on that, we have been in New Paltz High School. We started out about 2011 there. We got in with the social worker and the health teacher, and we would go in and speak with the health classes each semester for 2 days to catch all the kids that were in the health class. And then actually a parent had a problem with one of their kids and they referred them to me, and that's how we started the after school program now. So we've been in the after school program for about 5 years. We have, last year was the first year we actually had freshmen involved. We had like 25 volunteers. They're on fire right now. We actually went into the middle school and did a pilot program
last May for 8 weeks, bringing the high schoolers into the middle school for the lunch times. Two of those kids that were in eighth grade are now coming to our after school program. And there's a bunch of new kids that just started again this year. We expanded into Ellenville last year by taking New Pulse kids into Ellenville to peer train them, and we started their own after school program. We also went into their health classes. So each year we go in health classes for 4 days for the different semesters in Ellenville and New Pulse now for the last 2 years. So actually one of the students in one of those high schools' parent works in another high school. She went home after hearing our speakers and told her mom that it made such an impression on her that she had to get us in her school. So now we just are going into Highland tomorrow and the next day. Two kids I had in 2010 for a year, one of them. We got him into a rehab in 2011. He's been sober ever since, and I reached out to him, and he's now working in a psychiatric ward as a mental health worker, and asked him if he would come and speak at the program tomorrow, and he said absolutely. Another friend that came with him during the same time, who was sober, relapsed, he's been in recovery 2 years, is going to come and speak the next day. And then tomorrow we also have a boy who has been with me for over 3 years. He came and spoke at your legislature. His name was Dan Lehman. He was found drunk in an AA room by another guy who came to me. We helped him get out of his legal problems. He's been coming every Wednesday for 3 years now and says that it's the program that keeps him sober, even though he goes to the AA program, because it's the giving back. And he's actually going to come and speak for the full day tomorrow as well. So we're seeing their whole entire school within 2 days. And just, you know, having these kids from 10 and 11 years ago that are still showing up and saying that's what helped them get to where they are. I mean, you can. I mean, that's just a microcosm. There's so many other stories.
Can I throw one more thing? Is that,
sure,
do we have time? If I throw one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just you guys are probably aware of this, but there's like a loneliness epidemic and a social anxiety epidemic among teenagers. I know because I do a lot of work with parents of kids who do school refusal and just won't. They just had a training for the people at Socrates High School because school phobia, school refusal is such a big thing. But the same kids who are in their room smoking pot or playing video games or both, then going on to all kinds of other drugs, including heroin, being part of the heroin epidemic. The cutting edge theory right now for substance abuse is that it's an attachment disorder that's really underneath the substance abuse, and that if you don't address attachment issues, then you're not really helping people to stay sober. And the thing about this program is that, and I was around when we tried to get AA groups for teenagers at the high school, and I've been doing this for a while, it never really took off the ground for very long. Kids of this age don't go to AA. The older youth do, but and when they're pulled into it, and Marie's had a lot of kids go to AA from her group, because she has older people come who are connected with AA who will get older youth to come, but kids who are that age, they don't go to AA. So this is something that kids can go to before they have to go to AA or NA, and they bond and they connect and they create attachment with each other, which is what addresses, which gets them out of their rooms. That's a really big piece of it. So I just wanted to say that because I feel like I'm in a unique position to talk about it because I work with so many parents, and that's, I see it over and over
again. Yeah, we also use an evidence-based script that a clinical person would use. So it starts out with them saying, we're not here to tell you what to do, only you can decide if you want to make a change. We're here to help you look at your use and see. It's up to you, you know, what you want to do. And it's amazing. A lot of the kids, they don't usually want to come from court when they get a marijuana or alcohol ticket. And usually you think, oh, it's their first ticket. But no, if they're getting an alcohol or marijuana ticket, they're pretty far into other drugs already. So we just have a group of 10 now that are there. And they've been there some as early as 2 weeks. Some have been there like 5 weeks. And they're all like, I'm so glad that we came. They didn't know what they didn't know. So now that they've come and they get to talk, some of them are at the level to hear from Dan, who's in recovery. Then we have Cassandra, who's in SUNY New Pulse. She's 26. She worked for an agency in the not a county agency, but for autism. And she's amazing with the college volunteers. So we have like a mix, and the same in the high school. We have some kids who have never used that are peer leaders. We have some kids who have. So they all identify with different, you know, with. It makes it so that anybody can feel welcome when they come in the door because they actually can attract to somebody. And they actually created their own vaping presentation and did that at the SUNY, at the New Pulse High School for middle school and high school parents. And that's where the parents saw their own kids doing this presentation and wanted us in the middle school. So that's how that happened.
I, I just want to say Art Carl is great because I refer to them all the time because Gloria, I have all these kids in special ed, and Gloria goes to all these CSE meetings because I send people to her, and she's the best, and I love that agency. I couldn't help but be really aware that he was talking about that $200,000 budget, and you spend what? What is your budget for all the stuff that you
do? $23,000
or something like that, and this because it's all volunteers, so it really...
That's with $8,000 donated from volunteer, from our attorney or bookkeeper, two of our clinicians.
Yeah, everybody she's talking about is volunteers, so for the most part, so it's, you know, with a few consultant fees here and there. So anyway, just couldn't help, wanted to come in and plug the program, so I hope that's okay, and I appreciate everybody listening.
So, you know, with again, this year we're hearing the very good things you do, and it's so good. I have several levels of concern, and one is that this effort seems to me like it should be something that is sustainable and is funded through some mechanism other than here. I mean, when you come back and you talk about a renewal, this is not, the legislative budget line is not a secure budget line. And the work that you're doing has reached a point where I think that going to something like the Small Business Association, incorporating as a nonprofit.
We are a nonprofit.
Are you incorporated as a nonprofit?
Yes, since 2007.
Okay. Developing materials that present the organization in a way that is, to me, hasn't happened yet. You know, your card and a list of what you've been doing in 2018. If I were a foundation board member, which I have been, I would be trying to help you come up on the level of your administrative structure to what it sounds like you're doing in some of your work. And we raised last year as an issue a lot of what you're talking about as successes, and they probably are in an area where there's a lot, usually a lot of oversight, and because of our funding you without a mechanism for oversight, we don't know what you're doing. You know, I appreciate that you know coming in with people who are, you know.
Would you like letters from the schools? I mean, I've worked with schools for about.
I mean,
I have a presentation book we did in 2015 with letters from judges. DAs, parents, the kids themselves that were in the program, teachers in the school, I could certainly update that and get new letters on top of those if you'd like.
Yeah, and I think that that kind of thing should be, for a program that's operating in an ongoing way, updated regularly. And some of what you're describing as you have an evidence-based programming, that is something that I would care to know about. But I still feel like the place where you're bringing it to me here in the legislature feels awkward to me. I'm in the healthcare world, and I who else have you applied to for funding?
We get funding from Hudson Valley Youth Foundation, students, a lot of private donations. Many of them are parents of kids that we help, and they are amazed at what we do.
Can I interrupt? Yeah. I'm so sorry, but I just have to say something. Are you guys aware that the reason that she's not getting funding is because she's been blacklisted in Ulster County? Are you aware that years ago, her program, I was working in Ulster County Mental Health, and I received a phone call from a person at Family who took offense at something that Marie did, called me and told me that I shouldn't work with her, and then Ulster County Mental Health told me it was a conflict of interest for me to volunteer with her, and I just started working there. And the CASAC heard the same thing. She was blacklisted in the county for years and years and years. That's why when the restorative justice grant came up last year, she was only informed about it 4 days before the deadline, when she was a perfect fit. Somebody from probation who got funding from the restorative justice money called her and was interested in using her program, and then all of a sudden somebody put the nix on it and she wasn't allowed to use it.
Actually, just in April, the restorative justice, the women, there's Kim Mapes and the other girl that helps her, I think it's Alexandra, called me because she found me online. and said, oh my God, we're so desperate for what you're doing. I have a group of kids right now in New Falls I could send you. Could you have them do mentoring? And I said, well, I don't really have kids mentor each other unless they're like college students that I know are solid. I would be happy to do that. She like begged me practically to send her a proposal. I took time out and called Pam. We spent hours on the proposal. I sent it in, didn't hear, and I call her back. She's like, yeah, we send it to the county exec's office. We haven't heard anything.
Because she's out of favor in the county, and so as a result, being out of favor in the county, she can't get any funding.
Well, there's lots of funding sources other than Ulster County. I mean, that is part of what.
I'm sorry, Kathy.
Yeah,
but you're not denying that. That you're. I mean, everybody in this room has. Please tell me.
I am absolutely not accepting, and that from my perspective, you've been blacklisted. I do not have any evidence of that other than that you're saying it here. And I accept that that's your perception.
Oh, no, it's my experience. I was told by Ulster County Mental Health I couldn't work with her. And it was because of family taking offense because she helped Zephyr, who was in a car accident, who was the driver in a car crash, and killed his best friend in a car accident. And after that, when she had Zephyr tell his story in jail in his orange clothes to help kids who then were looking at why she shouldn't drive high. She was blacklisted in the county, and that's been going on for years. And that's why she's not getting funding or help. And that's why.
But
I just have to be honest about that.
Certainly, I am respect what you're saying. I just don't not sure how relevant it is to the concern I'm trying to raise here, because many of the funders that I could see as potentially helping with this might not even be in Ulster County, and certainly not part of Ulster County government.
Well, what about
so
the
leaving
restorative
that,
justice?
So I don't want to argue. I don't want to argue that point with you. Really don't.
I'm sure.
Because it's past what you're talking about anyway. We're talking about your present request, and I have no reason to blacklist you or have any negative opinion of you, except what you bring me or don't bring me. So when you raise those words, when I'm asking for what I would ask from anybody, then it just seems to me it takes the conversation in a place that's not helpful to you.
Well, I'm so sorry, but I thought you were. I just couldn't believe that people aren't aware of the politics of the situation that kept her from being invited in and then being asked not to.
If I can jump in here a second, maybe we can kind of bring things back for a minute. As far as the issues that you raise are regarding requirements and having you come here and explain exactly what you do and the effects of what you do have had on other people. Yeah, that's also our job as a policymaker to include that in any type of funding that we're potentially giving out. So we can always incorporate that into whatever resolution that would require for you to come in periodically and have not only come and speak with us, but also have and bring like evidence-based type results in literature. That way we know exactly what we're funding, and we don't get into a little bit of a back and forth to know exactly where we stand from your perspective, and I guess as well from a legislative perspective.
And I would just say that with the request for increased funding that is in front of us today, that the conversation we had in regard to ARCAL would again come into play here. These are monies that we should not be doing as member items. We should be going out for RFQ at the least and probably for an RFP. And if you were going to be successful in that process, the same types of things that I'm requesting would be requested. When we decided to enter a member item last year, we did that specifically with the request that you come back periodically with reports.
I was never told that. I would be happy to come. I always, anytime that I'm invited to
at
speak.
At the time that we said we would move forward, my understanding of what I asked for at that time was that the award would be conditional on you're not just showing up again at budget time and asking for more funding.
Well, I only came when I'm invited. I didn't.
Well, that's not how it should be.
Correct.
if you're receiving funding from somebody, which you have from Ulster, and this is just my view. If others disagree, then they can have a different opinion. But my opinion is that if you're receiving,
Laura,
I'll stop when you're when I finish.
I raised my hand a while ago.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize that.
Kind of tirade, but
well, I raised my hand and was recognized. I didn't know there was a stack.
I'll wait until you're done.
No, but I, in being supportive of a request last year, thought that I was very clear of what the county should receive, and that was periodic reporting. And I don't think that if you receive money from a foundation, well, maybe you would only give them what they, you know, required you to give them. I thought we asked you to come in periodically and.
But I can provide for you videos. I've had probably 20 people, kids, their parents, attorneys, come and speak, and it's all on videotaped, and I have links to it all. If you would like,
Laura?
I could send you.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that, you know, we had this almost exact same discussion with RCAL and with several other organizations almost a year ago. We didn't, as legislators, take any action. I would like to work, you know, with the Deputy County Executive to move forward on this, but also knowing through another contractual arrangement we had that the contracts weren't even ready until June or July. So, and I think the onus is on us. If we want reports, then we should require, as they should with the RRA, who hasn't been in front of the Environmental Committee for a while, that they either come in or submit written reports once a month. But that could go into a contract, and we do that here in the legislative offices.
Right, and I agree. Another example is the family at Woodstock. You know, we pay millions and millions of dollars to the family at Woodstock, and yeah, we don't often have them come in and explain and talk. Yeah, but it's something that should be you know, addressed prior to the budgeting process. So if people have issues with you know, others not coming in, then we should, you know, address those issues prior to, instead of it coming to, you know, ahead, you know, just prior to asking or potentially funding a program.
If I could just jump in one second. I mean, as far as Family Woodstock, those are contracts through the departments that have reporting structures.
Sure.
Through the departments, and this is the legislative item.
But we are oversight, and we are the ones that are approving
right.
these multi-million dollar
right.
contracts.
But I mean, there are reports to the departments, et cetera.
Sure,
that,
no, understood.
As far as the restorative justice piece, I just, April was a time of transition through different, you know, we transitioned from the Mike Hine administration to the Adele Ryder administration, the Adele Ryder administration to the Pat Ryan administration. So I'll follow up with Kim and Alex and see. I don't remember ever seeing, like, at that time, Ken Cornell would have been gone and it would have come in front of my desk. I don't remember ever seeing a proposal from you for the restorative justice piece or even the Brighter Futures initiative, which I think maybe there could be some work there that could be done out of the Restorative Justice Center. So I'll follow up with Kim and Alex. I will say that I don't believe that they're, I'm not gonna speak for prior administrations, but they're certainly not a blacklisting mm-hmm. now. I do remember when there was an issue between Oasis, and I know that all got cleared up, and that's fine, but I mean, I know that was probably a portion of what you were talking about,
a piece of
what you're talking about. So I just wanna clarify, because this is being recorded, and saying that this, you know, organization was blacklisted by the county, I don't know whether that's fully accurate. There may have been people in the prior administration that were completely friendly towards mm-hmm. it, and I'm not going to deny that, but
Thank you.
You know, I just think we need to watch
if
it.
If I can just jump in for a second, and to Kathy's point is that, yeah, as an incorporated not-for-profit, you are entitled, or at least subject to you go after grant money outside of the county. It's not specific to Ulster County. So have you ever approached or tried to get other grant-type funds from
I wrote two federal grants that mm-hmm. were very intensive and involved collaborating with treatment centers and the courts, and we didn't get selected. And it's, you know, I don't have a lot of people to help me do these things. I'm lucky to have the people that I need to service these kids and try to save lives in this epidemic. So, I mean, I would love to. I don't even know what other agencies would want to fund me outside of Ulster County, working in Ulster County. Because I'm right now, I'll take kids from anywhere if they come to where we are, but I can't, I don't have resources. Like, we did just expand into a church in Ellenville, so we have an older program there, and an after school just like New Paul, so that's like a same model, and with the courts, and we're going into Highland, and they're very interested in having us, you know.
So, you know, I think those kind of conversations we could have outside of the committee time. Mm-hmm. What strikes me is I last year, someone else on the committee offered to work with you and write up a contract, and the things that we were concerned with at that time, that we not have you contracting with the county for OASIS type of services, ended it up in the draft that came to me.
Was required by the county. I wasn't initially told that I had to be OASIS approved, but then when that whole thing happened, they put that in there, and I had to apply to OASIS, because if I didn't get approved, I wouldn't have gotten the money.
That's not my understanding. So the way I understood it, and I was trying to parse this pretty carefully, was that the county couldn't contract with you for OASIS covered services if you were not certified. You know, we weren't set up with them. So we were trying to identify those services that are not OASIS services and contract with you for those. The draft contract that came to me did not seem to understand that, which is now making sense, because it still seems like that's a way of thinking about this that isn't, you know, it's not shared yet. The reason that's important is because what Deputy Ryder was saying, in other programs where we fund, we have clinicians in the line of oversight, and those reports come and go from trained clinical people, and therefore the county can be, you know, to justify itself if somebody says something bad happened, then we point to our process, and we point to the professionals who are managing those programs. What I was asked to do when one of the other members of the committee couldn't do it was step in and help write that contract, which I did. And so that's why I feel pretty sure that we built in some reporting requirements. So we should get a copy of the contract that we county signed with.
I just got the contract like a month ago. Mm-hmm.
The contract from last year's?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were a little behind.
Well, I finished my work on that before the end of the year last year.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with you on that, but they're not the first contractor. The contracts aren't going out until July or August.
I see.
And then I got it in, and it still took months to get it back after I signed it.
Okay. Well, we should still take a look at it, because I worked pretty hard to try to get us to a point where we understood what the county was offering, what we were expecting, what you could do, and how we could help. So I do not in any way want to be at cross purposes with your program. However, sitting as a legislator and having, as I said, sat on boards of organizations that I think would be better situated to help you, I would rather have you be in front of those boards. But if you're coming in front of us, then I would like to have at least the same standards that I had in the private healthcare sector for the county's money. You know, it just seems like we don't do less in terms of spending the public's money than those foundations do in spending their monies. We have, if anything, a higher standard. So, yes, I think that we should think about putting in a line for the type of work you're doing in our budget, and we should think about going out for RFP on those services. And I want to let you know now, because if you're going to be applying for them, what you would need to have in place to have a strong proposal come in.
You do realize we only get between $10,000 and $12,500. We haven't gotten up to $30,000.
Yes, this is a big jump from what we did previously.
No,
what you're requesting.
What's a big jump? No, I requested 20, and that's what I requested every other year. They actually approved 21 year, but then at the end told me I could only have 10. So I just keep requesting the same amount, and I am grateful for whatever they give me, which has been.
Okay, I thought the current request was 30,000.
No,
let Laura jump in.
Yeah, I would just like to say, you know, in all fairness, both of the applicants have come in to do a presentation. And I do agree, outside of here would be a really good time to start to discuss, and I'll say it is our shortfalls, because this was discussed last year, and I never reached out to say, you know, is anybody interested in sitting and putting together an RFP process or a policy, which is really what we're discussing. But, you know, I would just like to say the applicants are here to present their program, and, you know, anything outside of that, okay, we should be discussing either internally or at another meeting and take action on it.
And I just want to say thank you for letting me speak. And, you know, I honestly, my gut was that you guys don't actually know as much about what she does as would really be helpful to you. So I've watched Marie spend hours and hours and hours writing up materials, going to, I don't know how many committees you're on right now, but at least, I don't know, it seems like four or five or six committees that you're on that you go to and present and help with and volunteer. And every time that people want information, you spend hours writing up stuff and submitting it. So anything that you guys want. I mean,
we submitted, you got the 3-page.
Yes.
So that was basically a breakdown of all the different components of our program with a little history.
But if there's anything else that you need or want, I just please know that I'm vouching for Marie that whatever you guys want, with goodwill, she will write up for you, give you, has documented everything, and is totally willing, I mean, to do that, and really appreciate that you're, you know, hearing her out, hearing me out.
Okay.
Thank you.
We are in 2019, but I would prefer to have some materials about 2019, at least a quarter or half a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing a report on 2018 just leaves me not feeling like it's current. And I didn't understand that you hadn't received your contract and any funding that we set up last year until...
I don't get the funding from this year until next year after I go through a whole bunch of... You have to give a copy of every original receipt, and so everything
mm-hmm.
is documented that I'm spending money on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I understand you haven't had an opportunity to spend money we thought we were giving you last year, and I apologize for that. And I didn't know it, and it's important that we know it. At the same time, I think we're trying to make our process for all of the people who might come to us be more transparent and fair. And so I think getting these materials updated, and for me, I would rather have a package of all the things that you have, you know, put together for people, and then I can go past any of them that I don't want, rather than have to ask you for things I may not know you've done. So I would say submit as complete a package as possible, and that'll give us an opportunity to know the program better.
Okay.
Marie, you can email Nettie. You can email me anything
okay.
you want to share with the committee, and I'll get it
to
them.
Yeah, I mean, we take attendance every week. We've been in, you know, two schools already this year. We're going in a third. We see the whole population. We're talking hundreds of kids in contact. So I didn't put what I was thinking. I would put it together at the end of the year and submit like the whole year. But I'm happy to, you know, add up what I have right now. And
you know, if it's similar to last year, and you know, in terms of format of just how many
the
students,
contacts and
yeah.
what we did.
Yeah.
yeah,
if you could do a half a year so
sure.
that we see that it's continuous,
absolutely.
That would be helpful.
And we're actually seeing more kids than we were last year. So.
Mm.
If I could just add one thing, I know New York State Oasis has tons of funding for...
Not for alcohol.
Not for alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not treatment. We're between nothing and treatment, but we do open kids up so that they know they need treatment.
Gotcha.
I mean, kids
and
in as little as...
They don't have anything for prevent. Like,
that I know of, there's no other program like what we do, and then on top of that, having it be peer-to-peer is just...
Gotcha. Okay.
I think we were trying to put it under educational, and I don't know if that would help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All righty.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
We'll move on to resolution.
Okay. I hope you guys don't mind that I was really honest, but I knew she wasn't going to say anything, and I watched this happen for so many years. I just wanted to put it literally on the table, and I so appreciate being able to be honest and you guys responding. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
It's really cool.
Okay, you too.
Alrighty, we will move on to resolutions. Well, just one resolution.
I move that we consider resolution number 14.
Yep. Move for discussion.
Second.
Alright, approving execution of contract, thanks to $50,000. Entered into with Wood Services.
Did everyone I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Did everyone receive an explanation from Director Iposi? I had concerns because it was, it says foster care, but it looked more like a residential treatment center. It appears that there's only one individual in this right now. I know he's trying to closely follow him, but it just says this child, his or her.
Yeah, if there's only one, it's hard to have any discussion.
Laura, I didn't get that.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't get it? I'll forward it to you.
You got it.
Yeah.
You were on here. It was sent
what time?
It was sent at 4:37.
Oh, today.
I was here with Anthony.
Yeah, that's probably
so if you would forward it to the rest of the committee.
Sure.
I know it wasn't. It was just sent to Laura and you.
Okay.
I
spoke with Commissioner Iposi, and he's talked about this a little bit. This is similar to other programs where we need to have this program in place so that we can use it if we need it. And we may use it very slightly, but we should have it because when a child or family needs this kind of services, then it's too late to go put it in place.
My concern was it said foster care.
Yes.
And it didn't appear by looking at the contract that it was foster care. It was more of a transient residential care facility.
Anybody who's in the care and custody of the Ulster County Department of Social Services is in foster care. So there is a child that's in the care of the commissioner that requires these services. This is in Pennsylvania. As Mike says in this, the commissioner, this child presents with a complex history of medical, behavioral, mental health diagnosis, which require intensive levels of specialized care. We can't just send him to a regular foster care facility or a foster care home. But it's still considered foster care because he's in the, he or she, I don't know the gender, is in the care and custody of the county.
Okay, but they're not in Pennsylvania either.
Well,
they can't say because it's hypothetical.
Well, no, I mean, I just don't know until we pass this contract if they're there. We have someone who presents that will need this contract.
Okay.
I'm not aware if they're in. They may have emergency placed them there pending this contract. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That makes me feel much better. All right.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Gary? Good. Yeah. Old business, new business. Hearing none. Motion adjourned.
Do we need to set the date between two dates? It looks like between Monday or Wednesday. Are you soliciting our opinions? Are we supposed to look at our calendars?
Oh, what is
that?
It's
November meeting.
Anytime after the 5th, Kathy.
Yeah,
you got it. Yeah, I think the 6th would be good.
Yeah, that's fine. Depending on the outcome, I may or may not show up. So.
That could be for a lot of us.
Well,
Brenda, you're going to have to carry things. November and December.
So the normal meeting date is the 4th, right?
Yeah.
And right now I have Iposi and Smith coming in that day.
Oh, okay.
So
they both agreed to that. So I'm hoping it's up to the committee.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can we try to move it to the 6th?
Yeah, if they're available.
If they're not available, then we couldn't meet on the 4th.
The 6th then?
Okay.
It's going to be like try to. Nettie will let us know.
Try to move.
We have to DPW at 6.
There's a lot of other committees on the 6th, too.
Well,
I think you have a group thing in session. I forget. I gotta look.
Okay.
All right, I'll communicate with everybody.
Sorry for bringing that up, but thank you.
I put on the agenda.
All right, motion adjourned.
I'll
so
make the motion.
Of course
you
will. All in favor.
Aye.
Okay.